What's up, y'all? Will here at Schedule Fly. This episode is with Megan Godey at Big Red F out in Boulder, Colorado. We've had a lot of people from Big Red F on this podcast over the years, and we're thankful for that. Big Red F's been a very long time customer of Schedule Fly, probably 12, 13 years, and has just the best culture that you'll find anywhere in any restaurant group. They've probably got 15 plus locations now, 800 employees, and their culture's phenomenal. And Megan and I talk about that culture during this episode and a lot of other things. Megan's a fun lady. She's easy to get to know, fun to talk to, works hard, but doesn't take herself too seriously, which is kind of the MO at Big Red F. Everybody is really good at what they do and they work really hard, but they don't take themselves too seriously and they have fun and they have a great culture. So we're always thrilled to have the opportunity to have somebody from Big Red F on this podcast, and this is no exception. And Megan has been there since November. I met her once briefly when I was out there, enjoyed getting a chance to talk to her more, and can't wait to hang out with her next time I'm out in Boulder or Denver or in that area. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode. And before we hit this episode, let's have a word from our sponsor, Pop Menu. Pop Menu is a partner of Schedule Fly. We have a lot of mutual customers, and those mutual customers are all very happy with both the product, the customer service, and the results that Pop Menu brings. Pop Menu is all about making your day easier and your sales bigger. They will simplify your marketing operations, bring in more guests, capture customer data for personalized remarketing to keep them coming back. With one super simple to use platform that integrates with most point of sales like Toast and Square and a number of others, Pop Menu starts with a beautifully designed, easy to update interactive menu that transforms the guest experience online. It includes a brand new website that's optimized for search engines like Google for no additional cost, automated digital marketing, online ordering and waitlisting, and you'll never miss another call with their AI answering solution that costs as little as 47 cents an hour. Plus so much more. Click the link in the show notes to go on over to Pop Menu. Check them out. That's what they like me to say. What I'll say, my two cents is, we have a lot of mutual customers, and I've spoken to them, and these are mutual customers of Schedule Fly and Pop Menu, and they all say, look, the product's great, the people are great, the result's great. Good company to work with. So go check them out. Highly recommend it. And with that, here we go. Megan Godey, COO of Big Red F Restaurant Group out of Boulder, Colorado. More episodes coming soon. See ya.
Hi, Will.
What's up, Megan? How you doing?
It's good. How are you?
I'm all right. Are you at home today?
I am at home today, yes.
Not at the famous offices of Big Red F.
Not today. I'm out hitting restaurants up here in a little bit. So figure I'd chat with you and go see some people.
Where do you live?
I live in Denver.
You live in Denver. Okay.
Yep.
Well, first of all, okay, so introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Megan Godey.
And you are, how long have you been with Big Red F?
So I am the COO, and I've been with Big Red F since the beginning of November.
Okay. I went to your LinkedIn profile and just to know what kind of stuff to ask you about your background. And so I'm fascinated. You played basketball in college, if I understood that correctly, and in West Virginia, but then you helped start Happa Sushi out there in Boulder years ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can give you the rundown of my exciting life if you want.
I do. And then 16 years at Sage. So, yeah, I mean, so first of all, did you grow up in West Virginia?
No, I grew up in Western New York. I grew up in a small town that was on a lake. And I grew up across the lake from this place called Chautauqua Institute. And it was a dry community. So there's no bars, no restaurants. And then there was a ferry that went across the lake. And where I grew up, it was where all the restaurants were. So in the summer, it was just a super, crazy tourist town. And then in the winter, I graduated with about 60 people. So it's a really small town on a big lake in Western New York, and started working in restaurants when I was, you know, I think I was cocktail waitressing when I was 10, you know, which is the common story of everyone from my town. But, you know, I worked in restaurants my whole high school career. And then I went to college for hotel restaurant management because, you know, back in the day it was, you go to your counselor's office, you find the book. The only thing I knew how to do was work in restaurants, and there was two schools for it. And one of them was in West Virginia, and it was the cheapest. So that's where I went. Yeah. So I went to school for restaurant management, you know, worked every summer, and I worked at Yellowstone National Park. I was a cook, I waitressed, I, you know, pretty much did everything within the restaurant world, and just on a whim moved to Boulder, Colorado after college. And so that's how I ended up in Boulder, just wanted to be somewhere cool and fun. And Boulder was it. And, you know, worked in restaurants there, and then met my friend Lori, who started Hapa. And she was really the kind of brains behind it. And then our friend Dennis was the chef, and I was the, I'll do anything else. And then we had Mark, who's the current owner, and he had the money. So, you know, it was just a group of friends and had some talents, and we started that, did that for, I don't know, a good 7-8 years. And then my friend Lori, who started Hapa, left, and she owns a company called Gravy. It's a company that does music for a lot of restaurants and hotels. And yeah, sorry, I'm just blattering on here, but
I'm fascinated. No, please.
Yeah. So Lori started Hapa, and she started this company called Gravy. And my husband actually works for them. And her first big client was in Caesar's Palace in Vegas. And the guy who kind of brought them in ended up moving to Colorado and starting the restaurant company at Sage. And so she introduced me to him when he moved here. And he's like, hey, you need to come work with me. I'm starting this restaurant company. And I was like, whatever. I've got this good gig with Hapa. Like, I started it. I love it. It's, you know, it's what I do. And it's also where I met Dave and Dana, because we worked on the Pearl Street Mall, right? So I knew of them and knew them and just fellow restaurateurs back in the day, late 90s in Boulder. So anyway, long story short, I ended up going to work with Peter because honestly, with Hapa, I was a little bored and a little ready to do something different. And then started this restaurant company that was embedded within a hotel company. And did that for, almost 17 years. And I basically opened our first restaurant and then went on to open and run, you know, all of our restaurants. And really where we started was, within this hotel company, we were kind of the arm that owned all the IP and started and created all of these brands. So back in the day, you never would have eaten at a Marriott until restaurants and hotels actually started to be good right around the beginning of the 2000s, right? Or actually around 2010. So at Sage, we really felt like we were a big part of that, like starting to create like actually great restaurants within the hotel space. Did that, opened restaurants with them for a good 10 years. And then I was running a restaurant in Chicago called Mercat a la Plancha with Jose Garces, and it was great. But I had a kid when I was 40, and you know, I never thought that was my path, and made the decision like, okay, I'm gonna do this thing. I'm gonna have a son. So I did, and raised my hand and said, I can't do this 24-hour a day hotel F&B gig. And Peter moved me back to Colorado, and I took on training within Sage. And oddly, then I ended up taking on HR for the whole company, which is kind of hilarious because I love the people culture side, but the whole, you know, compliance side, not really my thing. Yeah. And, you know, around that same time is when I started talking to Dave again, too, literally about 10 years ago, because I was at this flux of what am I doing with myself? And I literally every year for the past 10 years, we would chat and he'd be like, all right, Goaty, is it time? And I'm like, no, you know, it's good. It's still good. It's still good. Then the pandemic hit and I accepted the role of COO at Sage Restaurants. in February of 2020. So that quickly got really exciting, and where I was over.
Wait, February of 2020?
Yeah.
Holy cow. So like 1 month prior to this all.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, so that happened, and you know, I think within the first 2 months of my taking over, I had to let go about 98% of our staff. So I went from having about 3,000 employees to about, you know, 17 overnight across the country. And it was really wild, and you know, everyone has their COVID stories, but it was a fun time for all of us in the restaurant industry, and I felt really, you know, kind of proud of the way we held it all together. But honestly, it was a rough one. And all through that time, Dave's like, "What are you doing?" And honestly, you know, it was a rough few years, and I feel like we did really great work at Sage, but it started to enter my head of, okay, I might need a change here. Just if anything, just a reset and a refresh. So felt like a great time to come over and join my friends at Big Red F. And I'm so thrilled that I have. So that's kind of the long version of how I ended up at Big Red F and kind of what I've been doing in my 49 years of life. But there you go.
How old's your kid?
He's 9. So I had him when I was 40.
9 years old. How about that?
Yeah. Awesome.
So y'all live there in Denver, and, you know, Sage, what a great brand that y'all built with Sage. And I, you know, it's interesting because I always used to wonder, like, why do you go to a hotel and then you like go down to the concierge and be like, "Hey, where do I go eat around here?" It's like, because there's some like, you know, half-assed restaurant in the hotel or whatever. It's like, I need to go somewhere cool. That always surprised me. And now you're seeing less of that, but you guys were pioneers in that space.
Oh, we absolutely were. And we were, you know, really intentional about everything that we did. The hotel, the restaurants always had their own separate entrance, separate identity. Like within the Sage Hospitality umbrella, we were literally separate companies. And, you know, how it worked, like when I was a GM in, for example, the last GM job that I had within Sage, I was the GM of Mercado La Plancha in Chicago, which was in the Blackstone Hotel. So I would speak about it with my restaurant friends and guests as like GM of the restaurant. And, you know, that was about a $7 million restaurant. And then, but I also oversaw all the food and beverage within the hotel, which included a Starbucks, which included, you know, we were doing like $70,000 weddings every Friday and Saturday nights where we were bringing in like elephants for, you know, Indian weddings. It was nuts. And the concierge lounge, room service, all that stuff and things. So like within that hotel, we like as a GM, you would oversee all of the food and beverage, but really just from a guest facing perspective, you were the GM of the restaurant, because that restaurant brand really is what brought people in through the door. And there might be people eating your restaurant that have no idea that you're affiliated with the hotel, which was always our goal. Just because we didn't want to be the Marriott, you know, restaurant. We wanted to be something exciting and a reason. And even in the hotel, we would want them to leave the hotel door, walk around the building and come in through the restaurant door, so they didn't realize it was affiliated.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that I can't imagine just, I don't know, taking on that role right before COVID hit. What a task. It's so funny because I didn't realize you had known Dave that long. So every year y'all are talking. Well, okay. So you came in last fall as CEO. What was the, like, what did he and Audrey charge you with doing? Like, what's the main focus that you've taken on since you've been there?
Honestly, you know, it has been a little bit of a slow roll, just because it's, I mean, this company that I've just joined has this rich culture and history and tenured people. Like Sheila's been, you know, chef for 25 years there. So for me, it's really been coming in and figuring out how I fit in, and me and the goal for Audrey is to hand over operations, right? So all the chefs and directors report up through me, and really operations is my focus. So she can kind of shift and take on some of the things that Dave has been doing. And, you know, right now it's super flexible. We're figuring it all out. And I think that they're amazing humans and like just really good hearted people that I want to be around. Cause at this point in my life, just culture is everything. And so I am just thrilled to be able to figure it out with them. And literally Audrey every day is like, okay, do you want to do this? Or do you got this? And kind of we're slow rolling, figuring out like what we're best suited to take on. So, you know, I wouldn't say we have like this super, which I love. We don't have this corporate chart of who's got what, but we just got a bunch of talented people that work really hard that I think are going to, I mean, we're poised to do so many great things and pick up on this history of, you know, excellence that Dave and team have been doing forever. So, you know, again, I'm kind of rambling, but long story short is I oversee ops and Audrey's starting to hand off what she hands off and keep some things. And, yeah, we're kind of co-figuring it out together.
Well, you know, I just think Big Red F is it's a fascinating hospitality company because I mean, we've been doing this 16 years and I've gotten to know so many awesome restaurant owners and hospitality people. Big Red F just stands on its own from my experience and the people I've gotten to know over the years, because you figured out a way to grow. I mean, how many locations do y'all have now? Like, it's gotta be close to 20.
Well, you know, if you include things like Velvet Elk, there's 15.
But to have it in the volume you have, 800 employees or whatever, and I find it really fascinating how y'all have been able to grow as big as you've grown and still keep the culture that you have. And you've mentioned culture, and that is what I think of when I think of Big Red F. The first thing I would think of is great culture. Like, and I'm just admiring from afar. I always think it's fascinating to see a company that can grow and keep growing, but keep that culture. And I know that's not easy to do. It's really hard to do. And I'm curious. I don't know. I just would love your thoughts about that, because I don't know how Big Red F has been able to do that and do it so well with the amount of growth that y'all have had, even just in the last, few years, with Jack's and with the Post. You got a lot of people, you got a lot of locations, you got a lot going on, but you're still known for having this great culture.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and honestly, like I came from a place that had an amazing culture of, you know, and helped create it. And for me to leave that place, like would have, like, there's only one place I would have gone, honestly. And it's Big Red F, because I mean, it starts from Dave and Dana, right? I mean, they're just good humans, and what they, things like Will, the, or Nick, I'm talking about somebody else. I'm talking to you, Will. I just looked at your name and said that, but Nick, the brewer, right? Like basically servers passionate about beer. And now he's an award-winning brewer. And I think something unique that Dave just has this ability to really, suss out what people are great at. And then he taps into that and lets them run. And you know, he's super gracious with letting everyone consider, you know, everyone's able to think and act like an owner. And there's this entrepreneurial spirit where if you have that and you have an interest and a desire, he lets you do it. And he has a lot of trust and faith once he gets to know you and understands your skills. And I think that's rare that people and companies take the time to get to know and really enable people to do things that are going to make them feel super psyched every day to do what they're doing. And I think he just has this innate like ability to key in with that on people and allows them to be their crazy selves and, you know, do their thing within the restaurant world. And I think that's rarer and rarer, especially as people get bigger and bigger. I think you find that in one or two, you know, mom and pop shops, but the fact I do agree is the ability to have transcended that into multiple locations. It's something really, really special.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. What's the main thing you're focused on right now? What are you right having now? What's the most fun thing you're working on right now?
Oh man. I mean, like how cool it's been to join this company, right? So we were sitting in a meeting probably in December. So I'm up 6 weeks in and I've just been cooking and, you know, working in the restaurants, getting to know everybody. And first off, just having that time to get to know everybody. We've been thinking about, okay, what is our culture and what are our values, and talk about culture all the time. And we sat in a room and we all were throwing words on, you know, a board. And then it had this realization of like, okay, we're like 40-year-old plus white people sitting in a boardroom saying what we are. We should go out to our restaurants and actually talk to everybody. So the first 2 months of my job was literally just going into our restaurants, and I called it this culture tour. And I literally just went in and talked to everybody. What does it mean to you? How do you feel about Big Red F? We came up with these words, like, do these words like resonate with you? Things like innovative, proud, you know, hustle. We had the word rad. And so I really had everyone down to servers, hosts, bussers reflect on whether or not those words resonated with them, right? It was really funny because one of the words was rad, and like, you know, all of us like 40 plus Boulder base were like, yeah, we're totally rad. And so this 18-year-old host at Boulder was like, rad is like my parents use that word to think that they're cool. And it kind of makes me feel like you're radical in a way that is negative, like a fascist. And I was like, oh, really great perspective. So, you know, to kind of tie back the thought that like culture is so important, literally my first 2 months of my job was going to every restaurant and asking people what they thought of culture. And then literally yesterday we had an all team meeting with chefs, GMs, and any potential people that want to be a chef or a GM. So AGM, sous chefs, we had about 50 people all together, and we rolled out our new values. And where the values came from was talking to everybody about culture and really identifying the words that we use to talk about it. And then everyone agreeing with it and saying, okay, and this is who we are. And it's not because this is who we say we are. It's because this is actually who we are. And we took the time to actually kind of identify what that was down from not only like our chefs and our GMs, but our hostesses and the 18-year-olds and the 22-year-olds who are bussing tables for us and the Hispanic line cook. Like, what do you think? Like, we can say what we are all we want. So that's what I've been doing, is like literally just going out and meeting everybody. And I feel like that's also a testament as to why the culture is so strong at Big Red F. Because, you know, I'm like a well-compensated leader of the organization, and they basically had several months to just go hang out and learn about people. And it's that important to, you know, the leadership, Dave and Andre, that I had that time to be able to do that. And to me, like, that speaks volumes. So it was literally yesterday where we kind of wrapped up all that work, and we have a new like value statement and giant posters that we're hanging up in our restaurants just so we can talk about it. And then, you know, then all the other stuff like trying to staff restaurants and make sure that our teams are happy and all that. But that was a main focus of mine, is just to come in and really define what the culture is and have it in a different lens from someone from the outside. And it all rang true of what people thought it was. So yeah, anyway, that's what I've been doing.
I love that so much. I love the comment about rad. That's exactly, I need to ask my kids, actually. My kids are 19, 16, and 13. I need to ask them what that word means to them. I'd be curious what they say. What did you learn going out and doing that? Like, what changed from what y'all had talked about prior to, you know, having spent a few months going out there and absorbing what you did from the team?
You know, I think that my what I suspected rang true is just that there is it culturally just a lot of love in this organization of people who literally like, I mean, I talked to people that were like crying, like these people fed me during the pandemic. Like, I wouldn't have been able to make my rent, and they were able to like the family fund that we have. I don't know if you've heard of the family fund, but literally people in tears are like, this literally kind of saved my life. Just like how we were treated in the pandemic and, you know, the fact that they kept me employed and the fact that I could go to the restaurant once a week and get toilet paper or whatever. And just the communication around it. I think like it wasn't, it's what I suspected and like why I joined the organization in general, because I knew it had this rich culture, but that was kind of what I encountered, where people really these heartfelt stories of why they're so committed and loyal to the organization. So that's kind of what I learned. I think RAD was the one stand out from a word perspective. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't that surprising, but it was really life affirming for me personally, just in choices of like who you want to hang out with, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I love that so much. You know, culture is so, it's tough because I think a lot of organizations start to lose that the more they grow, because you can't measure it. Like, you know, you get big and you have to measure everything. It has to be a line item on a spreadsheet or whatever, a cost or a revenue, whatever. And you can't, culture just is like this nebulous thing. But this is what I love about what y'all do, because I admire this so much in your business, because I think it's such an important part. I mean, my philosophy as a business owner is always, to focus a lot on the immeasurable stuff. Like, the things that we can't measure, but the things that we know, it's like in hospitality, Dave and Dana, when I go out there, I stay in their house now. And I used to be like, hey, where do I stay? And Dave's like, you're staying at my house. I'm like, no, I'm not going to stay in your house. And now he's like, you better stay in our house. Don't come stay in some hotel room. And then I'm there in their house and they got all this stuff going on, but I'm sitting down, I go sit in the kitchen. Next thing I know, Dana puts a coffee in front of me, or he's putting, like, they're just so observant, and it runs, it's in their DNA. And it's this idea of, my point being that when I see great hospitality, I see people treating their customers the same way they would treat people that came into their home. Would you do that? If somebody came into your home, would you speak to them that way or treat them that? How would you want them to feel? And y'all have this great way of doing that at scale, which is just amazing. It really is.
Yeah. And I think, you talk about metrics and everyone wants to measure everything. And there is this kind of unmeasurable aspect of hospitality, right? And I think that's kind of what I was trying to say a little bit earlier, is Dave and Dana just have this amazing gut, right? Like they've got gut instincts on things, and they've cultivated like this way of bringing in other people into the organization where they trust their gut instincts too, right? And I think that that's like, that's kind of the magic of it, is that we've got really like-minded people that you trust their instincts and their gut. And there's not this, this overwhelming need to measure it, because it's non-measurable. And I come from a world that shifted over time. Like, that's kind of how we were early in my time with Sage. And then it turned into more like, I spent a lot more time in boardrooms and dealing with, asset managers and board of directors who always needed metrics and, didn't trust that kind of element, or that, like, trust me, like, we've got a good thing going. If I can't prove it in a number, you're not going to believe it. And that's challenging on hospitality. So Dave and Dana having this mentality where they do trust it, they trust that gut, I think is like super refreshing and really kind of the only way that you can keep it moving from my perspective in like a fast paced real way. So I think intangible. Yeah,
trust, gut instinct, all this stuff. It's you can't measure, but they're the foundation for, particularly in hospitality. It's like an industry where, there is just stuff you can't measure, but even, I mean, in any business, it's like, you know, whether it's, you know, a technology business, customer service, like customer service is such a big thing and it's hard to measure. So it gets lost. And then, you know, you call and you're talking to somebody overseas or whatever. And I feel like that instinct, is, well, good. It's a good thing that y'all still have that.
And I think it's innate in a lot of people, right? Like the person who's going to put a cup of coffee in front of you. Like if you came to my house, I would like have it decorated. The music would be good. Like the candles. I mean, it would have been a total mess like an hour earlier, but like there's a lot of intention behind it. And there's just, you know, different personality types and different people who are cued into that. And most of the people who are in hospitality for the long run just have that. Like I have this innate need to take care of you. I want to make sure you're good, that you feel right, that you're eating delicious food, that you like that drink. And like, it actually matters to me, where that might not matter to someone else. And they're probably great at, you know, doing something else like programming computers. I don't know, but I think that everyone that I've encountered at Big Red F has that same thing. Audrey yesterday, we're in this meeting, is like pouring coffee for people and just making sure they're comfortable. And you know, that goes, and Dave's doing the same thing. I'm getting tea for someone because they have a cold. Like, it's just who we are. And we've got people around us that all think like that. And you either do or you don't, and you can teach it and you can learn. But I think like the lifers like us who can't think of ever working in a different industry, it's because I need that to feel good as a person. I need to make sure you're good and you're happy and you're, you know, it feels easy breezy to be in the restaurant. I know all the work that went into it, but man, I want you to walk in and just feel like, oh, it's light and airy and this place has a soul and it feels good and it tastes good. I don't know why, but I like it. And I like those, you know, you talk about your purpose or whatever. Like for me, it's like, I want to see you take a bite of food and just smile and like all the hard stuff in your life fades away. And that might make a nice moment for you, but it's like everything for me. Like that's what gets me up in the morning. And I feel like that's kind of how the people that I want to hang out with feel, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So
I know you got restaurants to go see today, and I don't want to keep you much longer, but I will tell you that I'm back in North Carolina, thankfully, today. I came out there I flew out to Denver on Monday.
And oh, wow.
Flew back yesterday. It's the first time I've been out there that I didn't come and stay with Dave and Dana. But the reason is I got there Monday. I went to Windermere, to a place called Windfall Brewing, which I don't know if you know Abby and Sean. They used to work for Big Red F, and they started Windfall Brewing a couple years ago. They've got like brewery, high-end food, like 30 classic pinball machines. Super cool place. But I left there and I went up to Idaho Springs and I went to Bojo's, which is 50 years in business. Chip Baer started that place 50 years ago. And he was there the other night. He came in to town. He lives in Hawaii most of the year now, but he was there and we did a podcast and I ate their pizza and hung out in their original location there 50 years in. Amazing, amazing place. And I stayed on this little cabin, little Airbnb on a creek and outside of Idaho Springs. And it snowed overnight and I got up and I was like, oh, that's nice. It snowed. And the forecast said like an inch or something or two. So I didn't take it very seriously. And then I got up and I went into town and I was like, oh, there's a little accumulation on the roads, but no big deal. Had breakfast at some place in Idaho Springs. And dude, I got on I-70 yesterday. I fishtailed getting onto the interstate. I had a two-wheel drive and I fishtailed there. I was like, I'm probably going to have to call. And here's the thing. This is my point. I almost called Dave because I was like, I know he's back from his trip and I know he'll drop everything and come get me. And I would never ask him if I had to, but I was going like 4 miles an hour on 70 because the plows hadn't been through, two wheel drive. I'm sliding all over the place. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the airport. I might have to pull over and just try to figure out how to navigate Dave to where I am. It's come get me. I was freaked out, white knuckled. I'm 48 years old. I've never been in a car where I've been that anxious and concerned as I was yesterday. So I know y'all had some, and I know he's probably, you know, skiing Eldora right now or something like that, but my gosh, that is not a good idea to get on those roads with a two-wheel drive.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's so, we had this all day manager meeting and same thing. People were coming in from Estes Park and Fort Collins and none of us anticipated the drive. I'm sorry. That's the worst. The worst feeling.
So freaking happy to get to that airport.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad you're home.
Glad I'm home too. But you know, it goes to, but that's, I knew, I was like, Will, what are you going to do? Like, seriously, what, like, I'm like, I think I'm going to have to pull over here and just call Dave. And
yeah,
and
he'd figure it out for you. He'd send a team. He'd bring you some soup. You'd be fine.
That's right. Oh, well, listen, I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk. It was great to meet you a few weeks ago in person. And thank you very much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Thank you. It's fun to chat.
It's fun to chat. I'll catch you next time. I'll probably get out there sometime this spring or summer or something. So maybe we'll get to hang out and have a beer.
All right. Well, enjoy your non-snowy day.
Thank you. All right.
Take care. Bye.